When you stop and think about breast cancer, think about societal attitudes first. It was a disease we barely talked about decades ago, except in rather hushed tones, and generally about women who died from breast cancer. Contrast that with last October's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, when even uber macho NFL players wore pink shoes to publicize the efforts to defeat breast cancer. That's the awareness. But how goes the progress in treatment and prevention? That is among the topics for discussion this weekend in Medford at Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center when a breast cancer issues conference will be held. It's actually a simulcast of a conference being based in Portland, put on by the Susan G. Komen of Oregon Foundation. Tony Mountain is with the foundation and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Tony.
Good morning, Jeffrey. How are you?
I'm good. And in the studio with us is Melanie Dines, a registered nurse and breast cancer nurse navigator at Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center in Medford. Melanie, good to have you back on the
show. Good morning. Thank you.
Susan, Tony, lay it out for us. What are the basic goals of the weekend conference?
Well, the basic goals, Jeffrey, is that we want to provide information on breast cancer risk reduction, current treatment options, and the quality of life issues after a diagnosis of breast cancer. So we want our attendees to gain knowledge, find support, and feel empowered.
And this is generally then for people who are in or are treating other people with breast cancer?
It's for really both. So it's for survivors, co-survivors, and any healthcare professionals that may be helping those women who are traveling this journey of breast cancer. And we know we can't we need the help of co-survivors to help us get through this journey.
When you say co-survivors, is that the partners of people with breast cancer?
You bet. Exactly.
All right. How much would you say, Tony, has the technology changed in recent years? And I don't know what period you would consider recent, 10, 20, 30, whatever, but I mean, how far has the technology for treating, for detecting and treating breast cancer come along?
Well, it's come along a great length because I can personally attest to that. I was diagnosed with breast cancer 36 years ago this September. So I was only 30, and when you mentioned that it was hushed in those days, that's exactly what it was. No one talked about it, and we've come a long way in making sure that we are making sure women are aware that early detection saves lives. So with mammography, and I know there's controversies with mammography, but we do know that's still our gold standard. So until we can find something better, we want to make sure women are being screened.
Melanie Dines, I want to bring you in on that one.
Sure.
Because that is one of the questions I had on the list, is that you get bombarded with information, particularly medical information, in the mainstream news media, and particularly when it comes to breast cancer, there can be things that seem to conflict. Stuff like make sure everybody gets a mammogram, and then, wait, you don't have to get that many mammograms. It seems to go back and forth. What is the current state of the thinking on that within the medical community?
Well, the current recommendation by our radiological group is for women age 40 and older to have a mammogram every year. And actually, women who have a strong family history of breast cancer are encouraged to talk about it with their provider about getting a mammogram at age 35 as baseline.
Is it a constantly shifting environment, or has that stayed fairly constant about what to do in terms of detection?
I think it's been pretty constant. I know a couple of years ago, the U.S. Task Force and Prevention Group recommended every other year. But the importance of having a mammogram done every year, it's the only way that we can catch breast cancer at its very earliest, when it's actually curable.
That is the real trick then, isn't it, to make sure that you get there in the early stages.
Right.
Once you get past, what is the time period beyond which it becomes much more difficult to treat breast cancer?
Well, when it's diagnosed in a later stage, so for a woman who doesn't have regular mammograms and maybe feels something in their breast like a lump, and maybe it was a pulled muscle and it starts to grow and maybe they don't act on it right away, it could be stage 3 or even stage 4 when it's finally diagnosed. And then the treatment isn't curative at that point. It's more palliative and, you know, taking care of the cancer.
To make you feel better, essentially,
yes.
But with not a great prospect for survival then.
Right.
And to tie into that, Jeff, if I may say so,
sure.
That an early detection of breast cancer, the 5-year survival rate is now up to 99%. And as Melanie was saying, if it's diagnosed at stage 3 or 4, sometimes that is metastatic disease, and the survival rate is down to 23%. So those are pretty astounding percentage difference.
I did notice that number yesterday. I saw 22%, but that's in the same ballpark then. But so essentially, if you get further off in a later stage of breast cancer development, the chances of survival, we're talking 5-year survival. Is that the benchmark here, Tony?
That's what we always have said, 5-year survival rate for early detection, the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I would think the 22% has more to do with stage four.
Yeah.
We have a breast cancer support group at Asante and members who are in stage three who are doing quite fine, you know, several years out from their diagnosis.
And that's the beauty, I think, nowadays, too. Melanie probably can agree with this, is that we now know that breast cancer has become more of a chronic illness because of all the wonderful new treatments that are available to our women and men also who have been diagnosed with breast cancer.
When you say it's a chronic illness, what does that mean?
Well, we're living longer now with the treatment options. Even women with metastatic disease, I've known a couple women who are diagnosed with stage four metastatic disease, and because of the treatment options that were available to them, actually were able to extend their life expectancy to almost 11 years, which 30 years, 5 years ago, and when I was diagnosed, that was not the case.
So it's really much more about being able to spend more time living with the cancer rather than defeating it and moving on beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not to say you don't still want to defeat it, is it?
Right.
All right. So, Melanie, I want to ask you about Nurse Navigator, because we identified you as having that title. What is a Nurse Navigator? I know this is a term that has popped up fairly recently in the healthcare profession, but what does it mean?
Well, first of all, Nurse Navigators have been around for about 10 years, perhaps a little more, and a breast health oncology nurse navigator is pretty well known. Not every hospital has one. We're fortunate in Southern Oregon that both Providence and Asante have nurse navigators. So I'm a registered nurse. I'm actually a nurse practitioner by training. And so my primary role is to provide education and support and counseling as women and their family, their co-survivors, go through this journey. One of the things that I also do is co-facilitate a breast cancer support group, and that's very valuable. So, you know, when a woman is overwhelmed with information, doesn't know what questions to ask, doesn't know what happens next, that's where I come in. And I can go over their pathology report with them, meet with them in my private office, and just provide good support.
But they have to be receiving services at Asante, in your case, to be able to access you?
Yes. I have talked to some patients and family members out of state, but I usually refer them, you know, to navigators where they live.
Is there always contact with you? I mean, if somebody is getting treated for breast cancer at the Asante system, are they generally going to end up coming through you at some point?
You know, that's a good question, Jeffrey. Unfortunately, I'm not able to see all the new breast cancer patients for different reasons. You know, if I'm with a patient at a new oncology consultation visit and somebody shows up on the surgery schedule and I'm not there, I just can't be in all places at all times. But it doesn't mean that I am not available. You know, say if a woman has surgery at Rogue Valley and they say, hey, I never saw the navigator, I can still get those referrals and calls, and I'm happy to jump in at any point.
Sounds like it keeps you pretty busy.
It does.
All right. We're talking about breast cancer detection, treatment, support, survival with Melanie Dines from Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center and Tony Mountain from Komen of Oregon Foundation. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. And feel free to share your story with us. You may have a story about breast cancer yourself and how it affected you and your family. Join us again at 800-838-3760, 541-552-6782. 552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. Tony Mountain, have there been any recent major developments in the science, in the state of the art in treating breast cancer? Are there any are anticipated that might be coming down the road, that things that look promising that might be in the testing stages at this point?
Well, I think we can, yes, for sure, because we're trying to do more targeted therapies for the tumors. But I think with our keynote speaker that's going to be telecast down in Asante in Medford on Saturday will be Dr. Lisa Cousins, who's also a recipient of the Promise Grant. And her research literally is focused on scientific discoveries into new or enhanced treatments with the potential to reduce the breast cancer incidence or mortality. Her title is Good Cells Behaving Badly, and that is a great title because we know that cancer cells do go out of control. So she's going to be our keynote speaker Saturday, so we're excited to have her, and she'll be able to present more on what her research is doing in targeting the tumor cells.
Do we know a lot more than we used to know, Melanie Dines, about the genetic roots of cancer, breast cancer in particular?
I think we are constantly discovering new things about the genetic roots of breast cancer. For example, women who have a strong family history of breast cancer and say they get breast cancer when they're 30 or 40, they're usually recommended to have genetic testing. And the most common genetic testing is the BRCA, BRCA1 and 2 gene. And these are genes that everybody has. They're tumor suppressor genes. And so when you think of cancer, breast cancer, it's literally cells growing out of control. So with healthy tumor suppressor genes, with no deletions, they control out-of-control growth, which can turn into a cancer. So what I've found and experienced is that not every person you would think who would test positive for BRCA1 or BRCA2 are positive for that. So it makes you think, what other genes are involved? And so now we have a genetic panel called Breast Next, and it tests many more genes than just BRCA1 and 2.
So what's just in thinking about BRCA 1 and 2, and sure. The BRCA seems to be the breast cancer. I mean, it was just an abbreviation for breast cancer there?
Breast cancer gene. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
It can get quickly rather confusing, I would think, to a patient. So how do you explain to them what to read in the outcomes that you see on the genetic tests?
Right. Very good question. We actually have geneticist, a medical physician from OHSU that does telemedicine consultation conferences at Rogue Regional Medical Center. And I believe this happens a couple of times a month. And so anybody considering having genetic testing, I highly recommend that they meet with a genetic counselor to see if it's appropriate or not, and then to follow up with one. Because what if it comes back positive? What does that mean? What do you do with that? If it comes back negative, can you sit on your laurels and think, well, I'm never going to get it? And generally, the answer is no. But they need to talk to a professional, somebody who is specially trained in genetic counseling. I'm not. I can provide general information, and I know the resources to hook people up with.
What is the general thinking in the medical establishment at the moment, and I imagine mm-hmm. this changes over time, too, about preemptive mastectomies, for example, if you have the breast cancer genes and there's a history of it in your family?
Right. You know, that's a good question. I don't know if I have the exact answer. In terms of breast cancer surgery itself, the medical professional surgeons tend to recommend breast-conserving surgery more often. That means lumpectomy followed with radiation therapy, because when you look at 5-year survival rates for mastectomy versus lumpectomy and radiation therapy, they're quite similar. So getting back to your question, I have had a couple of patients, it's not very often, who do choose to have double mastectomy. Generally, when they're younger, they choose for immediate reconstruction. But you don't have to have that done. You can have increased surveillance. So, for example, you could have your breasts imaged every 6 months. So a mammogram in January and July, a breast MRI. Be very diligent with your own self-breast awareness exams and have your provider do an annual breast exam.
Tony, I want to put the same question to you about your knowledge in the medical establishment about preemptive mastectomy.
Well, I agree totally with what Melanie is saying, but I also have had women who have come to me because they are usually at a higher risk for breast cancer, especially if they've had a first-degree relative being a mother, grandmother, sister, and aunt. And if they're young and then find out that maybe they are at higher risk, and sometimes they choose to have the genetic testing, find out that they're positive, then they opt to do the prophylactic bilateral mastectomies. Kind of like Angelina Jolie did because of the carrier of the BRCA gene in her family.
All right. But as you were just saying, Melanie Dines, though, mm-hmm. that the treatment is quite a bit different from what it used to be. Just in terms of when there is cancer detected, the option tends to be first lumpectomy and then mastectomy. Mm-hmm. It used to be mastectomy was the lead way to handle
things. Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Like 30 or more years ago, they did the Halsted radical mastectomy. That was the only treatment. And it was deforming, defiguring, painful. Nowadays, that's not the case.
I remember hearing women at that time talking about, you know, losing muscles in the upper arm and,
yes,
and other things.
And having concavity in their chest, you know. So it's much different nowadays. It's actually, it doesn't involve removing the pectoralis muscle. It's not as painful as you would think. Usually the sentinel node biopsy under the arm tends to be more tender in lumpectomy and mastectomy surgeries.
All right, so changes over time. Let's take some phone calls. We have Kat in Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about breast cancer technology with Melanie Dines and Tony Mountain.
Oh, good morning. I had one comment and one question. My comment was regarding standard mammograms, which are included in my wellness exams for in my insurance. I went in 1 year having scheduled it myself, and I mentioned to the technician that I had noticed a small lump, and all of a sudden they wanted to talk to my doctor and get permission, and then they gave the code to my insurance as a diagnostic mammogram, and all of a sudden it was no longer covered by my insurance, and it became, you know, an $800 bill, which I feel like is probably discouraging women from sharing information with their technologist. I'm sure I certainly won't be sharing any information in the future if it means I have to pay an $800 extra for the same procedure. My question, though, is about molecular breast imaging for dense breasts, and if there's anyone here in the Valley that does that, and what your opinion of that is in terms of its accuracy as compared to regular mammograms for women with dense breast tissue.
All right. Thanks for the question, Kat. Appreciate that. Melanie, do you know anything about that?
Well, I'd like to address two things.
Okay.
First of all, Kat, thank you for sharing. And it is unfortunate that your insurance company didn't recognize the need for the diagnostic mammogram and ultrasound. What happens is when people come in for and they want a screening mammogram, if they have no symptoms at all, you don't need a doctor's order. But if you have a lump or anything abnormal, then you do need a doctor's order, and we have financial assistance. So part of the role of being a patient and advocate for yourself is calling the insurance company and saying, hey, you know, what are you going to cover, kind of thing. Now, in terms of the molecular specific test, she may be speaking about breast-specific gamma imaging. And I'm not the expert on that. I know that Providence at one time offered that. So I don't know if that answers the question.
But not at Asante
no.
at this point? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Tony Mountain, the whole issue of what insurance will pay for and not, I mean, given that we have changes in insurance with the Affordable Care Act coming online a few months ago, et cetera, are mammograms and other sorts of bits of detection of breast cancer now part of well care, that they'll be covered automatically under insurance, or is there still some struggle to get those covered if they're outside the normal period of time in which you get them?
Well, I tying into what Melanie said, it's true. It's like when you go in for your screening mammogram, those are now covered without a referral from your physician. But if there's any a concern of a lump or whatever, you would need to have a doctor's referral for that. But I also would encourage Kat to resubmit that to her insurance company with a letter from her physician why that diagnostic testing was needed. And also, and I don't know, I'm not familiar with the Medford area, if they have the new tomosynthesis, which is the 3D mammography machine, which helps detect more breast cancers in dense breast. So, Melanie, maybe you can address that if you know if that machine is available in your area.
You know, at this time, it is not. We certainly hope that it will be.
So is that a trip to Portland or Eugene or more likely Portland, do we know?
I don't know, Tony. Can you answer that?
Well, I do know they're available in Portland at the Legacy OHSU campus and one site in Providence at the Rickmanville Center. So I know that they're becoming more available, more common, just because they're able to I think, further detect any issue that may be of concern to a woman.
All right. We're talking about breast cancer on the Jefferson Exchange with Tony Mountain and Melanie Dines. Here's Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Exchange.
Hi, Jeffrey. Boy, if I was that woman who spoke previously, I would pop that guy right in the nose. Because what he's doing is he's saying, well, if you have a suspicion, then you need more looking. I'd say give me the full treatment, whether I have a lump, a suspicion, or whatever my condition is. I would be really mad at that.
All right.
But what I called about, I would like to know the state of the art of cancer-sniffing dogs. I think that's one of the most exciting possibilities out there, and they haven't mentioned it at all.
All right. Let's see if we can find out. Thanks for that, Grumpy John. Tony, any knowledge about cancer-sniffing dogs? Tony, you there?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Yes. I've had women say that their dog would either come closer to their breast or have some kind of, they just were more cuddly to them when they felt that they had maybe possibility and were later diagnosed with breast cancer. But I am not the expert on that. So it would be interesting to have more information, but right. I'm not the expert on it.
That could be a future segment on The Exchange.
That's right.
Given the changes that are coming, and in theory the wider amount of insurance coverage for all patients, do you expect to see more people coming to you for detection, for treatment over the years, Melanie Dines?
I certainly hope so. It would be good.
And the state of the art seems to be there to do some things for them.
Yes.
Absolutely. All right, Tony Mountain from Komen of Oregon Foundation. Komen of Oregon is the host for the Breast Cancer Issues Conference held in Portland but simulcast to Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center in Medford. That's Saturday from 8 to 3:30. Melanie Dines is breast cancer nurse navigator at Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center. Thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeffrey. It was an honor.
All right. Good to have you here. We will that'll end this hour. We'll come back on the Jefferson Exchange and talk about women in positions of leadership in hour number two. Stay tuned.